Yeah, it's really fun. Really fun to come look around, see the new place. It's quite lovely. We're envious of you, and in the best sense. That it's inspiring to see what's happened here, and that we're hoping something like that might evolve in San Francisco. I had a few different ideas about tonight. About what to do. I brought a talk, but I really don't feel like giving a talk tonight. So what I would like to do is something a little different, something that I do regularly in the sitting group in San Francisco. I don't know if you do it here or not, but I'd like to have a discussion. And so and there's a couple ways we could do it. I have one topic that I'll put out, and we can use that, but I don't want you to feel limited to the topic. What I'd like you to do is take a moment to reflect about what would be most important to you to speak to tonight. Like, if you could tell me what to talk about, what would that be for you? And it might be different for each person in this room, but for you to really reflect on what's important for you in terms of dharma, practice, your life as practice, Buddhist teachings, what might be the cutting edge of your practice? You know, where's the most interesting part of your practice these days you'd like to talk about or hear addressed? Or what's the most difficult part of your practice? What's the most challenging? Or what areas do you feel like you'd just like to hear more about? And one of the things I do is when I do a discussion like this in our group in San Francisco is sometimes I'll just call, you know, people raise their hands and I'll call on people. But I also like to call on people who don't raise their hands. It kind of ups the ante a little bit. Right? See, people are leaving already. So it keeps it a little more interesting if you think you might actually be involved in the discussion. So take a moment, reflect. And I will name the one topic that I've been interested in lately. We had a discussion last night in my sitting group about anger. And we talked about our relationship to anger, how we understand the Buddha's teachings around anger, how we relate to our anger or not. How has Buddhism helped you relate, work with your anger, inhabit your anger, or not? And it came, actually this discussion came because somebody in my group came to me for an interview last week and she said, you know, I hate Buddhism. I'm really angry at Buddhism. I said, how come? She said, because Buddhism makes me feel bad for being angry. Anybody ever notice that? So it was an interesting experience that she was describing. And I've seen that actually many times. I've seen that happen a lot. And so it was quite a fruitful discussion last night. So if you would like to address that topic, I'm happy to continue that discussion. I'll say one more thing about that. I can find it. This is for somebody asking Mark Epstein a question about anger. Said, as practitioners, we sometimes feel as if we must behave as diplomats for Buddhism, always acting gentle and not getting angry. Anybody ever notice that? That there's a kind of, if you're a Buddhist, you have to act a certain way. So, please. Fear as a is that your in your experience? Yes, that fear is a launch pad. Say a little more. How do you notice it?
Just as you peel the onion back and ask, you know, why am I angry? And going through the list, and then why is that the case? And eventually,
right,
getting down to, I'm afraid of if this happens again.
Right. So some threat is recognized. So what you're describing is a reflective practice. I'm angry, why am I angry? You ask a reflective question. Really lovely to do that. Wonderful to do that. And then you start to see, well, what is it that's kind of fueling the anger? I like that practice. I would wait a little bit to do that practice, though. Personally, I'm interested in inhabiting anger. Actually inhabiting the experience first, before I go to see, well, what's it cover, or what's under it, or anything. I just want to be with the direct experience as it is. I actually want to study anger in that experiential way. And that's where my interest is most right now. And what I find is, as I study it, in the direct experience, in the fire, in the heat of it, in the contraction of it, in the storyline that's kind of railing around about he did or she did or I should have or I'm going to, that as I do that, I'll often come, what will show itself is maybe what we would say is underneath it. But I'm not trying to get underneath it. I'm actually more trying to actually inhabit that experience that I personally I find uncomfortable, unpleasant, that I'm slightly aversive towards, and that I would rather not be having. You know, I'm watching my mind's attitude towards that experience. And there's a reason why I think it's valuable, or at least in my own practice, I find it valuable to inhabit it. It starts to cut the aversion as I actually inhabit it. I also see that it's okay. I don't have to be afraid of anger. Now, I also see that as I inhabit it more and more fully, as I really allow myself to... There it is. We had all these great sound effects last night. We had all this wind coming through the church. Perfect. That as I continue to inhabit it, there's a metabolization that happens that's not just me changing it with my mind, which I find less satisfying. Sometimes I can change my perspective by thinking about it, and that has a value. But for me, I find more value in the actual letting it burn through and then seeing what's at the other side of it. And I would say generally, it's fear or hurt is what's there. I mean, you will find this other fear, hurt, some threat, some feeling of attack. Really, life or death on the primal level, even if that has nothing to do with reality. As somebody said in the group last night, oh yeah, if somebody steps, somebody sneezes, I can get angry. It's perfect. Somebody said this, you know, and it has. But it's somehow threatened their reality, the sneeze, or somebody sits too close to you, or in the wrong place, or, you know, do people know that? You can get angry at anything, right? So, thank you.
This might be a little branch of digression,
but... I want to say one more thing, excuse me, about some of the instruction I like to give in this kind of discussion is to stay very present with yourself as we're discussing this, whatever the topic is. Meaning, the meditation doesn't stop. You don't have to do formal practice, but continue the informal practice. Feel your body. Like even as you go to talk, see what it's like to stay very present with yourself as we're in dialogue. It's a juicier kind of contemplation than if we're just thinking about things. Okay, thank you.
So this is something that comes up to me sometimes, and I've never heard it discussed in any meditation sitting, and it came up to me today. I feel there's tremendous energy, sensations that I can feel myself contracting down strongly on, and they can be fear, anger, so they can be anything. It doesn't really matter. Sometimes I want to speed up my breath or increase it to be able to let it go more. And the thing that comes up for me is that going to disturb people? Or maybe if it does, that's just let that be part of their meditation practice. And I just kind of, and no one ever really talks about that, and most people are usually pretty quiet. And I just
just to clarify, are you saying that there's a more expansive energy that comes?
Well, there's.
I'm not sure. Say it again.
I can feel myself contracting, for whatever trauma in the past or whatever. The story doesn't really matter, but and I find that there's a tendency to hold the breath and to contract the body. That's like the unconscious habit. And what my body really wants is to be able to open up the breath and open up the body. That's like kind of a natural. If I really just let go into my
what's happening
is, and just sometimes that it's kind of speeding up the breath to match the energy is one example of just something that it wants to do, or it doesn't have to be that, but and which is fine and it works for me and I like it and I do it in other practices and other circumstances, but I always wonder if that kind of breaking that unspoken taboo in meditation.
It's a very big taboo. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Okay, so did everybody hear the question, basically? Okay, so let me repeat. That he sometimes has experiences that he's actually clamping down and holding the breath tight. And really there's a part of him that wants to just get kind of bigger, more open, fuller, faster kind of breath and physical experience even to some extent. And that he feels somewhat inhibited here. Because everybody, the general guideline is sit still. And in certain Buddhist traditions, really, if you move in the hall, often in the Zen tradition, certain Rinzai, they'll say, don't move. They'll be really firm about it. We're not so firm about it here. But you might feel the cultural valence, which is, in any culture, has its valences. It's helpful to illuminate them.
What's a valence?
Valence, it's like the shadowing or shading of the cultural mores. So here, and the culture here is to sit relatively still. But that doesn't mean you can't allow the expanse of energy. And in fact, it's an interesting question. I had someone come, we had a day long in the city, and this woman came who's, I know her practice, and she sat on retreat with me, very good yogi. And she came and she wanted to talk to me immediately. She said, I can hardly sit. I said, how come? She said, well, I'm kind of falling in love with somebody. And she said, and so I can just hardly, I'm just like, I said, well, why can't you sit with that? What happens if you allow that? She said, well, I just feel like I'm going to just kind of fly up into the room and I'm so excited. And I said, well, that sounds great. What's the problem here? But there is often a certain kind of shadowing that we are supposed to be quiet and down. She said, I keep feeling like I want to settle down. I said, no, not at all. Don't settle. Go with it. See what happens if you stay present in the middle of it. But the key is to stay present and not simply to become enchanted with it. And so that's the razor's edge a little bit. If you simply go off, well, I mean, that's not a bad thing to do, but it's not exactly the practice we're doing. As I understand it, it's allowing what's happening to arise fully and to be known. and actually not try to control it. I am not trying to control my experience when I sit here. I can give you another example. So, of course, we're doing this. I knew we were going to do this discussion about anger last night, and we had a steering committee meeting earlier in the afternoon, and I got into somewhat heated disagreement with someone on the steering committee. And so then when I went to sit, there was all this anger, which is, you know, good for the talk part. But and so then I actually want to just sit with that. I want to actually allow it. And the motto, and people here who know me know this is one of my mottos on retreat, is kind of let it rip is my motto. But let it rip doesn't mean acting it out. And let it rip means not repressing and not acting, but simply not controlling my experience, but staying fully present in the middle of it. And that for me is really a razor's edge and a very interesting place of practice. So notice what happens. I had my eyes open a couple of times. You were letting it happen a bit. It was okay. People were okay. So you're welcome. Hi. I have.
That when you, in fact, that's part of what is attractive to me about this practice, is that all feelings are permitted. The point is to know what they are, to stay present with what they are, and that the emotions that we identify as negative that might cause painful feelings are not something that we can walk around or over.
I'm happy to hear that you've gotten that message, but I don't think that's the only message that comes. I have heard Buddhist teachers say anger is bad. It's actually a pretty common understanding in Buddhism, you know, one of the three poisons, you know, greed, hatred, and delusion. Well, anger comes under the hatred poison. And those kind of words are used traditionally. The three poisons or angers, you know, it's a hindrance, it's a defilement of mind, very common under, you know, in traditional Theravada language, we would say it's a defilement, it's an obscuration, things like that. And those have a slightly negative valence, you know, poison doesn't sound too good, or defilement or impurity, you know, those, and so I think, it's here in the tradition. It is. It's in the tradition. Here, I'll read you. Let's see. This is from the Buddha. Actually, this isn't so bad. He just says, guard against anger erupting in body. In body be restrained. Guard against anger erupting in speech. In speech be restrained. Guard against anger erupting in the mind. In the mind be restrained. The question is, what is he saying, and how do we do that? I mean, even the idea of being restrained sounds kind of tight. It's not the actual experience of anger. You don't feel restrained when you actually feel anger. It's quite a lot of energy to experience. And so if you feel like you have to be restrained, there can be a conflict with that kind of energy. Now, I also want to say it in terms of so-called positive energies, like the woman who was feeling in love. in some ways she felt like, well, it was too unrestrained. And she needed to get down. She needed to, which in my understanding is not exactly the teachings. But it comes in, you know, we hear this kind of language. I think it's just important to talk about it and see how you want to practice with these things, with anger or with love or the passions. This is from the Zen tradition. In order to know the way in perfect clarity, there is one essential point you must penetrate and not avoid: the red thread of passion that cannot be severed. Few face the problem, and it is not at all easy to settle. Attack it directly without hesitation, for how else can liberation come? Then this is commentary from, I can't remember the teacher's name, John Didro Lori. Pardon, how do you say it? Didro Lori. Yeah, thank you. He says, the red thread of passion is an expression used in Zen to describe the deep emotions that all human beings experience and deal with. Shakyamuni Buddha had to deal with them. All teachers have had to deal with them. The dictionary defines passion as intense feelings such as grief, rage, love, or eager desire. So this is the area a little bit we're talking about when we talk about anger or love, passionate love. Please.
Mm-hmm. As other religions have similarly evolved as they move in space.
Pardon?
Other religions, we discuss Christianity and Judaism, as they have moved around in time and space, they, as Buddhism, have changed the teachings a bit. And what I'm hearing from Rainbow, mm-hmm. And you were just setting up a
colloquy. A what?
A discussion.
Yeah. yes. And I think that's, I think it's, well, here's what I think. I think it's actually what Rainbow described is actually in the traditional teachings, and it's not in the traditional teachings. It depends what stream you look in. For example, I mean, some teachers would really say anger is bad, period. And that's not uncommon at all. I was working with a fellow, when I was staff teacher at Spirit Rock, I was working with someone who was a caretaker, a wonderful guy who had a lot of anger. Really a lot of anger. It's kind of leaking out. And he was actually very traditional in his practice. And he had a hard time feeling the anger because anger was bad. It was a defilement. And so I was trying to get him to actually feel his anger a little more directly. And he wasn't having it, you know. And he really wasn't having much of me either. He was like, you don't know. You know, you're just a lay teacher. You're not a monastic. And so I said, well, you know, then talk to Ajahn Amaro. Because Amaro's a wonderful teacher. I thought Amaro would be helpful. So he went and talked to Ajahn Amaro. And Ajahn Amaro said, well, good. You could do some reflection practice with this. Go up to the top of a hill, sit down, bring up the people you're angry at and then do whatever you want to do to them in your mind. Cut them into pieces. Do whatever you need to do. Squash them, whatever it is. Yell at them, scream. And then sit with that experience. And so, I mean, Amaro's, he may not be the most traditional monastic we know, but he is grounded in the teachings quite thoroughly. And what you get in the Thai forest tradition, especially the tradition of Ajahn Chah, is you get a very strong reflective practice in that way that is very relaxed about whatever comes. Seeing the selflessness of it ultimately, not having to take it personally, even when it feels very personal. Does that speak to your... Okay, good. Please, hi.
I've got questions about the story.
About the story. That's the problem. So did everybody hear this? Okay. So she's saying she sees that there's a story and that if she can drop the story, the energy dissipates and you feel peaceful. It's nice. But the problem is the story keeps coming back. Anybody ever have that experience? This is a really key piece. Because actually, if you can drop the story, it's usually not a big deal. And so drop it when, you know, if you can drop it, great. But if it keeps coming back, then what are the skillful means? That's the question for us. And I'm a really bad teacher to ask about story because I like stories. And I also, here's how I understand stories from a Buddhist perspective. Story, in Buddhism, we tend to speak a little more impersonally generally. So we talk about the causes and conditions of feeling angry, let's say. Well, stories are just part of the causes and conditions. And I like to think of them that way because then I don't have this slightly negative valence on the story. Like the stories are bad and I shouldn't have them, I should just drop them. No, people have stories. How do we work with the story? So for me, for example, I'll use myself. So last night, I was angry at this person on the steering committee, and so I was watching the story about, you know, there was a story. You know, she shouldn't have done this, and why is she doing that? And I'm, you know. But I'm staying very present with the experience that's happening while the story's here. If I just pay attention to the story, I don't find it so fruitful. But if I start to feel the heat and the tension and the tightness and the fire and really let the story go, I hate her, I'm going to get rid of her, I never want to speak to her, I let it go all the way, I let it get totally absurd. I let it be as irrational as I am in that area. But partly I have the capacity, you know, slowly through practice, and still it's a practice, to stay present with that irrationality. And it starts to lose its fire, not because I'm trying to get rid of it, but because that's its nature. It's not permanent. It's not even self, ultimately, but for a while I actually feel it as myself. It feels like I'm angry. But at a certain point it starts to dissipate. And then I actually, and here's the carrot that I hope you all can go away with. In the Buddhist, in the Vajrayana tradition of Buddhism, there's a very strong understanding that emotions, strong emotions, passions, have a transformative power, and that anger transforms to clarity. It kind of burns away the delusion, and you can see very clearly. You know, fear transforms to trust, faith. as we stay with fear all the way to the bottom. You know, sorrow transforms to compassion and kindness. And so it's very fully in our practice to allow these things. And even the story part. We don't have to be so afraid of the story. It's important to notice, like even when I'm having the story about this person, I knew it was not totally the truth, right? And that's important to see. But I'm not using that to get rid of the story at the same time. Does that clarify a little bit about story? Stories are, it's really interesting that we have the stories and they have such power. I'm still fascinated by that phenomena.
About what you just said about the story, one thing I noticed though is the habit of feeding the story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, like retelling it and then just feeding it.
Right.
And so how, that doesn't feel very skillful to me.
Right, so feeding the story. So one way that I work with the feeding is to feed it even more. I give it everything it wants for a while. But again, the key for me is to stay present while that's happening. Really feel what's happening. Really stay present in body. Really stay present in the heart at the same time. And it's usually very uncomfortable. It's not, you know, I've gotten more comfortable. But it's a little bit feeding the demon practice to just let it rip. Because often I find if I inhibit my story, if I make it nice, you know, if I'm a nice guy being angry, that's not how anger works. I'm not a nice guy when I'm angry. I'm an angry guy when I'm angry. So, Kel's going to kill me.
I wanted to talk a little bit about anger and practice in everyday life.
Yeah. Please.
Right now I'm working with the boss who gives me a chance to practice a lot. And I'm really staying with it for the practice, consciously.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to hear your... What I do find a lot of times for me, what's happening is when anger comes up and I breathe through it in the everyday moment, the decisions that I make as a professional actually change, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if it's for the better or for the worse.
Mm. Great question. Everybody hear that? I like the last part, that you don't know if it's for the better or for worse yet. Sometimes we don't know. Sometimes the only way we learn is by making mistakes. And personally, that's okay with me to make a mistake. I'm not a perfect Buddhist. I have a really strong sincerity, intention, but I don't know what I'm doing. I learn by actually trying things. And even in just in sitting practice, I make mistakes all the time. I go too far this way, and then I find my balance. And I'll go too far this way, and then and that's actually how I learn in practice. And so I would encourage you to not be too careful, to not know. And then to see what it's like to hang out also with the not knowing, which is a very uncomfortable experience for some people, right? Good. That's where true knowing comes from, is from not knowing. Often we think we know. For me, I find that can be quite problematic, my idea of what's true. But if I actually live into the experience, live into the moment, stay very, and not know, things reveal themselves, and it's not me doing it so much or even figuring it out so much. The Dharma reveals itself. if I can stay present. Is that helpful a little bit? You're also describing a whole set of complications, which are roles, hierarchies, money, career, you know, which make it a much more complex issue. It's not like, you know, if I'm getting mad at my wife, you know, that's part of our deal, right? She can get mad at me, I can get mad at her, and we work with that. Depending on where you work, the kind of situation, and the culture there, some places you can't get mad at a boss at all. You know, Spirit Rock, you can get mad at people who, you know, in the administrative, people are always stunned that that's okay, because they've never worked somewhere that's okay. So it makes it more complicated. Important to appreciate the complexity of it. Personally, it brings a lot of compassion, is what I feel then. And I hope you feel that for yourself in trying to work with it in that situation. Good luck. I'd like to hear from either somebody who doesn't agree with what I'm saying or is reacting to what I'm saying. I think that's always really helpful for the discussion. Here. Please.
And the reason that anger for me is that when people or any external energy interferes to my boundaries,
is a fear.
It interferes. I feel that I just cannot make this boundary so solid that
right.
Make it clear.
So I'll just, you know, yeah. She's saying partly that for her, anger is debilitating a little, takes away energy, feels like it doesn't give you energy at all. And for you, it's hard for you to make clear boundaries. What I would encourage you to do is keep investigating anger and see what happens. Really look carefully, because how can I say this? Anger turned inward will be debilitating. Anger that's not allowed in some of its fullness, not necessarily acting it out, but in some of its fullness, will actually be debilitating. It takes a lot of energy to hold anger in. Okay. So that's the place to investigate. What do you believe will happen if you feel your anger more fully? Okay, great. Thank you. Please.
Well, I'm not saying why anger, when I express it outward, makes me sad also, because when I go through the process where I'm going to go away and I work through the anger and all the story goes away. Mm-hmm. But if I'm with the story, and it's out there, then I created something else.
Thank you. That's a very important part of the discussion. I realized I was thinking of that as implicit, but I'm really important we make it explicit. I don't mean to say anger is good. I don't. I mean, all we have to do is look anywhere in the world to see the tragedy of anger that is just being expressed, that is just being acted on as if it's the truth. So I appreciate that that's here, because I don't mean to say anger is good. What I mean to say is anger is something that we all have to work with. And how to do that skillfully is the question for all of us. And I'm not saying that my way is the only way. Really, I'm just offering you what I know. And for you to do as you see fit. You know that line from the Buddha. He teaches, he gives talks, he has dialogues, and he gives instructions, and he always ends it by saying this. He says, now it is time for you to do as you see fit. And I love that, because it always gives us back the responsibility, the practice, and to find the truth here, whatever it is, for each person. And so I think we're almost at that time for me to say, now it is time for you to do as you see fit. Actually, we have time for one more, but thank you. Go ahead.
Just at the same point, in the moment of experience, there's the story, there's the sense. Of course, I'm right, and it's wrong, because it's always
I feel exactly the same.
And in that moment, how do you work? What kind of suggestion for working through the being present and so forth?
Okay.
Process for me.
Right. It is. It's a process.
But right there.
Right there. The first place I always turn is to my body. What's actually happening here? What's the felt experience? I know Gil likes to use that felt sense. Go for it. What is the action? Because that's what's most uncomfortable, generally. That's one of the most uncomfortable parts of anger, is the energetic, somatic, kinesthetic reality. And so if we can start inhabiting that, we start to find our seat in the middle of it. And then it's also some reflection. This can be very helpful. What's going on here? Why am I so angry? You know, all they did was, you know, cut me off. I'm fine, you know, but I'm furious. You know, and then, so, but for me, the key is the somatic, kinesthetic, energetic level. If I can find my place there, I'm home free, really. And then I don't have to act on it. And I'll often wait, you know, pausing. Waiting is quite skillful. Sometimes it's really skillful to act. Now, I can't tell you when that is, but sometimes just saying no is really important. Really important. And we know it with children. Sometimes you can't be rational. You just have to say no because it's dangerous what they're doing. Or, you know, there's got to be a kind of firmness or force, a directness that's very strong. And anger can provide that if there's enough clarity, if it's burnt through. But I can't tell any of you when that time is for the boom action. For me, I can say I've learned to recognize it more over time when I just need to say no or stop. And sometimes I'm wrong. You know, the great thing personally about if I express my anger or a certain kind of, and I'm wrong, is I apologize. And, you know, we're all doing the best we can. So, last.
Since I was practicing a lot, I wanted to give you my suggestion, which is the breath for me right now. When, you know, if I'm yelled at or someone is being unkind to me, returning to the breath and making sure that I've taken a couple of those before I decide how I'm going to react. Which is kind of the same thing you said, but just...
Yeah, so you're using the breath to return to find your seat, basically, even if you're standing. Yeah, great. And actually, I'm sure there's a lot of different skillful means here, you know. We're out of time now. I think 9 o'clock, right? Okay. Thank you all. I hope this was a little helpful. Definitely helps me to hear people talk about it. We'll take a moment to do a little sharing of merit. May our practice here, our sincerity, our dedication, our intention, be a benefit to all beings. May our very lives be a benefit to all beings. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be free from suffering, from war, from racism, from hatred, from fear, from hunger, from all the divisions that divide human beings. May we all be free. May all beings awaken, realizing wisdom and compassion. Again, thank you all. It's really a pleasure to be here with you, and I just wish you all many blessings with this building and your Sangha. It's wonderful.